It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine like jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests, bow your heads as the Lord's mentioned. Prayer service held in the kitchen.
I wish they it is Friday. It's John Pollock and Court Bauer with you. Aptly named Bauer and Pollock. How are you, Court?
I'm terrific down here in New York. How's everything in Toronto, home of the Blue Jays?
Oh, boy. When the bats awakened on Thursday, it was a big celebration here in Toronto. A destruction of our heated rivals, the Texas Rangers. 10-0 as we prepare for Game 2 today, which is starting at a very convenient time, Court, of 1 p.m. Eastern time on a Friday.
So what's going on at the Fight Network offices? Is the TV's going to be all changed to the Blue Jays? What's going on?
No, we are actually, myself and my co-host John Ramdean are going to be live on the Fight Network because that is when the UFC 204 weigh-ins will be taking place. So some definite competition for the Toronto Blue Jays if you want to watch the 204 weigh-ins. That is where I will be at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time today.
Yeah, the sacrifices one must make. Covering the UFC, the big UFC this weekend with Michael Bisping defending his middleweight title.
Yeah, are you watching this card on Saturday?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to see if Bisping – I'm rooting for Bisping. You know, it's great to see him finally get the title. Now he's got to keep it. It's an interesting opponent.
Yes, he's fighting Dan Henderson, who has said this will be his last fight, regardless of whether he wins or loses. We shall definitely see. I think with Dan Henderson, he said, you know, if he got some incredible offer, he would at least consider it. He's even said, I could fight another 2 or 3 years, but I'm not going to.
I don't think he should.
I don't think he should either. But if he were to win this fight, it's funny because of all the middleweights Michael Bisping could have defended this title against, he would probably be the underdog against all of them. Jacare, Yoel Romero, Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold, even Gegard Mousasi. I feel Michael Bisping would be an underdog against all of them. And this is the one guy he is a favorite against in Dan Henderson. This is a fight that either guy could win, and I would never say that about Dan Henderson and any other middleweight. But I think a lot of people have the memory of UFC 100 and feeling that Dan Henderson can still land that one power shot.
Of course.
But I mean, he is not my pick.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. I look at a guy like Michael Bisping, guy that I think was one of those guys that could have gone to pro wrestling and actually been a pretty big star too, because he can talk, he's got charisma, he's got fire, and he's a wrestling fan.
They'd have to change his name.
Well, I think they'd keep the Count gimmick, give him some fangs like Gangrel.
Oh, that could be it. Yeah, he could have a monocle, maybe.
Do a new age brood with him.
Lots of ideas you could make with Michael Bisping, because this version clearly didn't connect with people.
No, I don't know. They really have to go back to the drawing board. He just doesn't connect at all. The crowd just doesn't react. But, you know, talking about, you know, guys that crossed from UFC over to pro wrestling. Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg. There's so much speculation, so many rumors about what's going down in your hometown of Toronto for Survivor Series. There's speculation about Goldberg returning in his first fight match back, I guess, facing Brock Lesnar. Is it going to happen? Will it happen? Is he going to even wrestle in WWE? All question marks as of this beautiful Friday morning.
Yes, I think everyone expected more out of one Bill Goldberg on ESPN this week. I mean, I have talked to multiple people, and it seems that that is the lock, that he is wrestling at the Survivor Series on November the 20th. I think everyone is anticipating that. You can certainly debate whether that is the best place to bring him back for. Obviously, this ties in with the video game promotion. I don't know. Do you think that the Survivor Series needs this when, I mean, they're in a weird position because you have typically the luxury when you have a big match, you can pick when and where you put it. With Brock Lesnar, he has X amount of dates. So if you're using a date for him, you want to have the most advantageous opponent to draw with, in Bill Goldberg. But I don't know, when you're drawing or attempting to draw 60,000 people 2 months later, Court, is throwing this match out at the Survivor Series worth it to you?
I would really have to think you have to, I mean, you can assume that a lot of people know who Bill Goldberg is, but it would also help to establish his dominance for 2-3 months, show him as the man in limited little. I would do the old Goldberg thing, just have him destroy people, and just build him up, and not every week, just a few times, showcase him between now and Rumble. Not every week at all on Monday Night Raw, not wrestling at least. And he can't, I don't want to see him doing promos because it's just, there's a certain mystique. There's a certain game plan to booking a Bill Goldberg. But yeah, I think Rumble would be the best place for him if you're not going to do it at WrestleMania. Either of those better candidates in the Survivor Series. I mean, but hey, for you guys in Toronto, that's a big get. But at the same time, it's such a weird thing just to see that match. Like, it's like they're hot-shotting Bill Goldberg, and maybe they don't know if they're going to – look, Sting only lasted how many matches, and maybe they're thinking, well, we got to be careful with these kind of situations. I mean, I think Sting would have done more if he hadn't gotten that neck injury, but you don't know. I was kind of disappointed that we weren't going to get Brock Lesnar's team versus Bill Goldberg's team at Survivor Series. You could have had Bill's Brood versus Brock's Rocks. I don't know.
You certainly could have done that, and I mean, you would have had to give people some Goldberg-Lesnar interaction, but that could also preserve the singles match, and you get two shows out of it as opposed to just the one and doing the singles match.
No, honesty, though, I don't want to see them touch unless it's their first singles match, and then you can go, it's like almost, it would be booking it reverse to see them do that. It kind of dilutes the anticipation of them wrestling to have them do Bill's Brood versus Brock's Rocks.
Well, Corda, if there's a lesson to be learned from the WrestleMania 20 match, the quicker they touch, the better. Yeah. As opposed to milking it and getting the complete opposite reaction. Were you at that show in the house?
I was in the house. I was not working for the company, but I was in the house for that one, watching it. And I actually went out to the crowd to watch it at that point, and it was such a weird environment because everyone knew it was like the lame duck match. They were both on their way out. The only guy staying was the special referee, and he doesn't wrestle anymore. And so it was such a weird dynamic. The crowd just shit on the match. At one point they even laughed. They're like, fuck this. You could just feel it, you know? And it was a New York crowd, you know? It was an aggressive crowd. And they, you know, one guy is saying, fuck the WWE and walking out. The other guy just had a really rocky run. That year, just the crowd was bad. You know, the gold dust wig on him was one of the things I always think of from his run. It was just an uninspired creative run for him there. And it wasn't him as much as how they presented Bill Goldberg and his willingness to allow that, I guess. It was a weird energy in that match. And, I don't know how this match just mechanically works. Is one of the things that you have to do in a Brock match is ragdoll a guy. And so, you know, that's also kind of what you have to do in a Goldberg match is Brock selling for extended periods is go back and watch the tape. When you see Goldberg selling, it's very, not good. And Brock can sell. He will sell for you if you lay it in, from what I'm told. Like, really lay it in, old school style. But,
to me, the template for that match, go look up his match with Scott Steiner from Fall Brawl 2000. Those two, I mean, on paper, you're like, what the hell is this going to be? And they just had this real great match together. And they didn't go long. They didn't need to do 20 minutes, which I don't think this needs either. I think you could do this in 12 and get everything you need out of this and just have this as high a pace a match as you can expect out of a 49-year-old Bill Goldberg, but a guy that is – he trains daily. I mean, this guy owns a kickboxing gym. It's not like he's just in cosmetically good shape. He's leaned down significantly from his wrestling days. And I don't have the same worries, I think, that others do, that he can do a match, especially, 15 and under. I don't think these two should be going 20 plus. That would be a mistake.
The key here is it's not going to be what I call a clinic, but at the same time has to be an acceptable level of a match. And it should, like you're saying, it should be a shorter match, a violent match. And what's the end result? Probably Brock going over, because he's going to slaughter people until they find the guy to end that, to dethrone Brock from his reign of terror. And I don't think it should be Bill Goldberg, to be honest. I think Bill can still contribute and do good things in WWE if he were to go past one match, but I don't think it should be Bill Goldberg, beating this guy. But, you know, that also says, oh, he loses in his first match. That can be weird too. We're all speculating. Who knows how it'll roll out? Who knows if that will be the program they ultimately do? I will say this, 2K books a better WWE product than the WWE right about now. If you look at how the commercials and how they build anticipation for the launch of their games and what they sell in their games. I mean, both commercials have been amazing. Two or three now.
Oh, the latest one is outstanding. With the downtown, it's excellent. I feel that 2K is like the seniors' developmental program for them. I mean, it's like senior NXT. I mean, they go out, they sign Warrior, Sting, Bill Goldberg. It's like that's how you get all the legends.
Right.
But there's none left.
Yeah, I mean, we're at that point now where it's like, who's out there that you would go after? I mean, Shane McMahon was one of those guys. He appeared in the last game and poof, he's back in the WWE fold within months. In this case, it's like, who's out there that is A, available, B, alive? I don't really know. But it also says a lot about their inability to create a new generation of stars. One star that is really breaking out, and we've talked in the past about the need to revitalize Canada because there's an appetite for wrestling there like very few other places. Matthew Dubé of the Canadian House of Commons made a statement to the House of Commons on Kevin Owens, which I thought was awesome. He basically put him over, and you can check it out. It's online. Actually, on his Twitter account, he posted the video.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Did you see this?
This was essentially a fan promo.
It was awesome.
In the House of Commons. I don't know if I'm crazy about my government spending our time putting over professional wrestlers, but nonetheless, this was a hell of a promo from this guy, Matthew Dubé. It was pretty great. I hope that they air this on Raw.
They should.
I think that, yeah, I mean, this just makes your, and, if you're listening closely, like he's name dropping other wrestlers too, like Mad Dog Vachon, Pat Patterson, Chris Jericho, and even in there, mention of Pat LaPrade, who you may be familiar with, the author of Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs, the story on the history of Montreal. He's also doing a book on the history of women's wrestling. So this guy, clearly entrenched in the Quebec wrestling scene, Matthew Dubé.
Well, if you,
but this was great.
This was great, and it was like, you know, there was an opportunity. It's a statement by the members, and they make declarations, and this was his declaration. This was his moment, and he put over the WWE Universal Champion. So it doesn't hurt to just show a few seconds of that on Monday night, just B-roll that, because I think it's cool that you have someone. I mean, from just looking at his government, it's goofy, but for WWE, for the champion, that's a nice little piece of business. And you know, Bill Goldberg might return. Luke Harper returned in Santiago, Chile over the last few days. What do you think about Luke Harper coming back in the mix? You think they're going to put him on top? He was in like one of the bigger matches on the card.
I hope that he's put on SmackDown. Mm. And not necessarily having to be attached to Bray Wyatt, which when you're adding him to SmackDown, that's the obvious link.
Right.
I just feel Bray Wyatt is almost, I don't know what to make of this guy at this point. I just feel this feud with Randy Orton is just a disaster. It's everything about why this character is not over to everyone's expectations in Bray Wyatt. It's the Hocus Pocus show, and everything around it is just brought down as a result of it. But that's my Bray Wyatt rant. With Luke Harper, I just think that SmackDown, there's just much more ability for a guy like to do something with, because on Raw, he becomes the latest Sami Zayn, the latest Neville, even Cesaro and Sheamus. I mean, this is their hope is that this odd couple tag team connects and works. And I'm glad they're in the tag division where they can be focused upon more. But as singles, I mean, they were guys on Raw, and that's where I could see Luke Harper ending up instantly if he's brought over there, especially when you have the focus on Braun Strowman. You're giving him that singles push. Is Luke Harper really going to get much on that show as opposed to SmackDown, where you do have a bit more flexibility and need for singles guys.
Well, I think Luke Harper can stand on his own. You know, I think the Y family is a cool concept, but I also think that he's a guy.
It's run its course, yeah, I think, as the threesome.
He needs to move on. And Bray Wyatt's essentially kind of sort of reinvented himself a little bit, but still, if they defang, you know, a monster, you don't have a monster. And that's what's gone on with Bray Wyatt. And it's also interesting just looking at WWE eyeing Chile, because that's a market I know from talking with Hugo Savinovich. He's found a lot of success in the last year running major arenas. He's run arenas like 8,000-10,000 seat arenas and sold them out with guys like Rey Mysterio coming in, Carlito, MVP, and a who's who. And clearly WWE is tracking that, because now they're down in Chile and doing good, very good business. So interesting to see how WWE attacks the South American market in the next few years, because that's there's a lot of thriving new economies emerging out there. I mean, look at even Brazil, which a lot of people from South America consider like its own place, because it's just totally different business. Culture-wise, it's so different. But I can also see that being a huge market. Of course, we're just coming off of the Olympics down there. So interesting to see what WWE does as they try to expand and go into different places, and you see with the Cruiserweight tournament this summer that, you know, even finding talent from different corners of the world and maybe trying to use them moving forward will, you know, help them in these key places, be it Hong Kong or Chile.
It feels like a month ago since we last talked about TNA with all that's happened in the last week with this company. They did go ahead with Bound for Glory. They have gotten through most of their television tapings, but the luck that this company has had this week, I mean, Hurricane Matthew is
the new investor
in the midst of hitting Florida and has messed up all of their tapings this week. So they have had to adjust this weekend. So they're going to be staying an extra day and doing tapings on Sunday. But in the course of the last week, we got the Bound for Glory show. They flipped the TNA title off of Bobby Lashley to Eddie Edwards on television. There was the tape library rumor that was going around that at least doesn't look to be any kind of confirmation at this point. What did you think of TNA's past 7 days?
Well, I mean, it's always going to be an up and down ride for them until the ride just abruptly ends. And I think that will just happen out of the blue one day. Until then, it's going to be this. And they are surviving. But that's about it. That's the extent of what they can do and what they're able to do. You're not going to entice licensing partners and toys, video games, apparel, with a business right now that's so unstable, with nothing to really promote. I mean, if you were to put together some sort of promotional packet to say this is why you should be a partner of ours from an advertising perspective, from a licensing perspective, anything It's going to be very hard. People are going to look at it and just shrug. You know, Google TNA right now. It's going to be like, oh my gosh, if you do your due diligence right now, you're going to be spooked. So whoever's going to, I don't even know how to anticipate or predict what TNA is going to be, in the future. Was it an outright acquisition? Is it going to be, is it going to bankruptcy? Any and all these things are still possible. You know, I hope for everyone involved that it continues to chug along and if anything, it hopefully stabilizes. But I've been saying that forever. So they'll ride this one out like they've done with virtually everything. And it was just, you know, they have Eddie Edwards as their new TNA champion. He's an incredible talent. You know, it looked a little weird too when you see the celebration and there's like four or five guys in there. And it just looks, and you look at the crowd, it doesn't look. It doesn't look like a crowning of a champion when you see that picture on Twitter.
Up here in Canada, it went past the two-hour window, so I wasn't watching live. So he wins the title. They throw to break with like 2 minutes left, and then the thing ends. So I never got to see the post-celebration because it went over.
Well,
there was like an overrun on this taped show.
Just to recap, he was very happy, and there was a few guys there clapping.
Well, that was nice. It was very reminiscent of how he won the ROH title from Roderick Strong a number of years ago, right. And it was just totally out of the blue. I will say, with Bobby Lashley, I feel this is the best booked TNA heavyweight champion ever in that promotion's history.
Yeah, well, I think they were consistent, and Bobby really grew. I mean, if you watch how he started in Impact, or TNA,
night and day,
it's like you see the confidence there, you see him grow. And he's done an amazing job, and a lot of it goes to, frankly, Bobby. He really was in the zone and locked in and knew what was right for his character, and sometimes he would push back when he felt was wrong for his character. So, you know, he deserves a big pat on the back himself for this. It's not like he's a puppet. He really kind of took control of his fate and has been greatly rewarded, as has viewers and fans. So what did you think of the Dixie locker room meeting? Which I guess did zero for morale, but it seems like a strange meeting. Like, what was the purpose at the end? Because you didn't really.
Oh, I wasn't there.
I thought you were the guy in the corner. Oh.
Well, I think it was more to just reassure people, but I think that the locker room, I think, is not naive to the fact of what's going on. To just put out a message there, everything's fine. Oh, people were actually concerned about the tapings going on. There's such a mixed message publicly. Or I should say, what Dixie Carter was stating versus, like, you know, on Friday, I think it was last week, she put out that tweet to say, I don't usually fuel speculation or whatnot, but everything is fine and we're going ahead with everything. It's like, Dixie, that's not speculation when the president of your company is going out on television stating these issues.
Going in the New York Post, going to any reporter with a mic and giving them comment.
And stating the fact that the ownership situation, the WWE is interested, and when asked if the pay-per-view was happening, stating, well, we're expecting it to. I mean, not exactly your stamp of approval that at least Dixie Carter was giving a much different message towards. So the idea that those two had very different messages, I think that became very evident that they are at different areas at this point when it comes to the public message.
Well, one of the TNA guys that's making big moves, and there's no disputing it, is Cody Rhodes, who's going to be appearing as a drug dealing villain on the upcoming October 19th episode of Arrow on the CW. I was hoping he'd be like a DC Comics villain, not like just a random henchman or something like that. I would have liked, I don't know, what Mr. Freeze, maybe. I could see him being a good Mr. Freeze.
You said Cody Rhodes. I don't believe that man exists anymore.
Oh, Cody.
How is he going to be billed on this show? Cody Runnels?
Probably.
I guess so. Or Cody. Maybe that'll be his on-screen name too.
Or you could have him as the wife or the husband of Brandi Rhodes, Cody.
He'll be dealing a codeine out of his backpack or something.
Well,
for college kids.
Jeez.
Is codeine something that is in high demand amongst drug users?
I don't know. You tell me.
I've never watched Arrow. And
good name for a finishing move for him, though.
Arrow?
No, codeine.
Codeine's not a bad move.
He's going to drop codeine? Oh.
Yeah, it's better than the go to sleep. It's like
it's the next
numb
version
to sleep.
Yeah, it's like the better version of it.
Did you see his either the Bound for Glory or Impact this week? I thought he came off very well on Impact in particular.
He carries himself like a star. I mean, he carries himself as a star, and that he projects it very well. You know, he doesn't feel like he's playing the role. He feels like he is a star. You know, he does. And I think it's cool to have a character like that, but also have, you know, the broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero's. And TNA has a really, I mean, look at Bobby Lashley, and if they put a blanket around Eddie Edwards and really groom him after becoming champion, they now groom him to be truly the guy, and you feel that he's on the level of these other guys. You really have a nice collection of top talent from in-ring to the persona end. It's frankly ironic that TNA in all of its years now has probably the most creative or stable creative, and everything else is just falling apart.
Yeah, they're at a point where, yeah, some things are getting over on television. I think it's a largely enjoyable show most weeks at this point, but it's coming at a time when there's such, you know, to be quite frank, little value in just good creative. It's everything else that surrounds it it's better to have a great on-screen product than a poor one. Mm-hmm. But at this stage, that it really doesn't matter. I've said it before. If the number comes out today and it's 500,000 viewers and it's the most they've ever done on Pop, what does that really mean?
Yeah. I mean, here's another one. Speaking of viewers and where's the product going? Lucha Underground Season 4, taping should begin later this year. Might be early next year as well, but somewhere in that ballpark. And Lucha Underground, you know, we talk about comics with the Arrow thing and everything. Lucha Underground staff and characters, not wrestlers, characters, to appear this weekend here in New York at New York Comic Con. I know Dorian Roldan will be in town for it, one of the owners, exec producers. And so it's good for them to touch the comic scene because I think their product is really kind of in tune with that. But I think having something that showcases it in a bigger, grander way, in be it a San Diego Comic Con, New York Comic Con, it would be more effective. They're trying to get into that space as well.
That's a natural tie-in for that promotion of all wrestling promotions.
Yeah, it really does. I that's a company, again, I'm just like, how do you not have masks for Halloween? How do you not have a Drago mask? How do you not have a Matanza mask?
God, is there, have you been following the news? Is there going to be a clown character on Lucha Underground?
It feels like it's a good time for the Psycho Clown and all his friends to come up north of the border, or maybe for a revival in WWE of Doink the Clown. There's many opportunities for clowns to make a comeback. I don't know if Doink was ever actually in fashion. I remember that angle and the character way back in the early 90s, and that didn't feel like it clicked in any sense. I mean, maybe looking back, I'd appreciate it more now, but...
this clown thing is crazy.
Yeah.
Have you
come across a clown? No. Just in the business.
Have you got any warnings from school, from your kids, that they are monitoring these clowns? There was a big thing this week in Toronto where these clowns showed up at like a little kid's school and was like frightening these children.
I don't
know. It's crazy.
That's disturbing. It's everywhere.
You're going to have 10 million clowns on Halloween.
That's the thing. I mean, it's just one of those things. I think it's in time. It'll just go away, or they'll team up with the ICP and take over the world. And I guess the government had a reason to be concerned about the insane clown posse. I don't know. Are you scared of clowns? Do they freak you out? Do you have a strong reaction when,
No, I never understood the whole frightened of clowns thing because I never watched it when I was a kid.
Neither did I.
I think that was usually the precursor to having a fear of clowns. But I also didn't have assholes dressing up as clowns in my neighborhood trying to freak me out, because I probably would have a fear of clowns if that was occurring.
They actually caught someone in Westchester this week. He was driving a car going up this main street in this town here. Not my town, just nearby in Ossining. And he was wearing a clown mask, and the cops like, "Yo, asshole, what the fuck are you doing?" And I guess they actually arrested him for something else that was going on in his car. It's everywhere. I don't know. It's just a thing that's going through the culture right now.
No, it's weird. If you're just walking outside with a clown mask on, it's like that's not really grounds to just arrest somebody for wearing a clown mask.
No, that's what happened here. It's like, I guess the guy could have, it was fine to be driving with a mask, but then they got something else was happening, and I don't know.
No one wants to hear us talk about clowns any longer. No, I can guarantee you that. I can always hear people's inner thoughts when we're going deep into a topic that I know they loathe. So let us continue then
You're like an X-Men. You can just read people's thoughts here.
That's my Halloween costume 365 days a year. That's my special power, Mr. Bauer.
Oh, well, what was your take? What did you hear about WhatCulture.com's pro wrestling show? They had Jim Ross this past, yesterday. Jim Ross, Jim Cornette, Alberto Del Rio, everyone out
there. Kurt Angle.
Off the show. Seemed like it was a packed house. They did an pay-per-view, I guess. What was the word on the street on this show? Cause I haven't followed this.
Yeah, this looked like a loaded show. I mean, it was in the middle of the day for those on the Eastern time zone, so I didn't have a chance to go watch it. I haven't seen any of their shows prior either, but the production looks really good, and it just seems this was another case of an iPay-per-view just having a disastrous live stream for those. So I know that you can go and catch the replay now, whether it's on the Fight app or on their website at WhatCulture.com. Mm-hmm. So I think you can go back, and it sounds like it's okay to go back and watch the replay, but live, it was just a disaster, which, I mean, at this stage of the game, it's kind of just expected, at least for me. When I go to watch a live iPay-per-view, it's with the full expectation that I might be putting my head through a wall 20 minutes in.
You think when iPay-per-view started, I remember companies like Ring of Honor at the forefront of it, that was like almost a decade ago. If not a decade ago, and here we are and really the technology isn't any more stable, really. And it's not just one company. It's virtually every company except for WWE, and even WWE streaming platform through BAM, it still has its rocky moments.
Did you guys ever have streaming problems when you briefly tried that unlimited deal during the Raw commercial breaks?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't remember any reports.
I don't recall any issues with that. And you were essentially telling your entire Raw audience to go to this during commercial breaks that, man, if something was going to crash, and there was no payment involved there, it was just a live stream.
Yeah, I don't think there was a lot of, I don't think we had this massive spike of viewers. I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of people going on, but I don't know if it was an absurd amount. But, you know, you look at today, just the technology, everything is advanced, yet pay-per-views are still just a shit show, no matter where you go, no matter what you look at. I mean, New Japan World does a pretty solid job. I don't ever really watch their stuff live, so I can't speak to the live, but everything. It's really good. One of the things, you know, talking about Japan, there was an NHK special that aired earlier this week featuring Tiger Mask and Tom Billington. It was a reunion, and it was, you know, I saw a bit of it on Twitter. There was someone like live tweeting it with pictures, and it was really sad to see the state of 58-year-old Tom Billington at this point. I don't know if you saw those pictures, but it was really kind of, you know, everyone knows that this guy has been through it, but to see this current state was really sad.
Yeah, I mean, we've all read about his health problems. It was his full leg that was amputated?
Yeah, I don't know if it was the full leg. He had a partial amputation. I know that. And if you look at the pictures, you know, basically Tiger Mask, the original Tiger Mask, Sayama, is talking to him, and he's basically, his eyes are essentially closed. He looks completely out of it. His wife is, I think his wife Dot is explaining to Dynamite, you know, what's transpiring and stuff. And it was really uncomfortable when you look at this and you realize I know he's part of the lawsuit with the concussion issue. And given his style, that headbutt wouldn't surprise me if this is, you know, the real deal. And he's also had a lot of issues with drugs and stuff over the years, and just his physical state. I understand probably wanted to be in an altered state, but it's really sad to see this guy who was such a vibrant, amazing wrestler. So full of life and, you know, very colorful character in general.
Well, colorful, yes. I mean, this is someone that, I mean, let's be honest, this was not the greatest individual that has ever graced professional wrestling,
person,
and that covers some
course.
Ground.
I mean, as a person, but as a talent, you know, there was another side that was, you see this guy so full of life, you watch those old matches, and it's like, wow. But yeah, a lot of people were not enamored with him as a person. He did sound like some pretty bad things,
You know, for a lot of the guys in the concussion lawsuit, it's one that you don't expect that lawsuit to really go too far. But for Tom Billington, and he outlined it in his book, I mean, the story about how he just wrecked his back and had to come and drop the tag titles up here in Hamilton, and literally just being dragged to the ring. And being held up by Davey Boy Smith as he was just laid out on the floor so they could drop the titles. It's just amazing that that occurred, even though it was the 80s when it was, I mean, much more of a crazier mentality for the WWF, something that you couldn't even envision ever occurring today. But that was just an awful deal when you read about what he went through physically towards the end of his WWF run, and then continuing, like even into the 90s when he did the
Shinoku in 1996. He wrestled 1996, and that was like his body was shot. I mean, like that last fateful match in Shinoku, and he documents it in the book. It's a short read, but I think it's called Pure Dynamite.
Oh yeah, it's a great book. I mean, he puts a. You know, the Japanese stuff is very much covered as much more legit in the book, but it, to me, that thing came out in 1999, and that was one of the
first books of its type, really.
Yeah, I remember reading that just a week or two after Mick Foley's first book came out, and it was like, holy shit, like, these wrestling books have really turned a corner.
I remember being so disappointed in Arn Anderson's book. It was like all in kayfabe. I'm like, ah, man, I'm such an Arn fan. Why'd you have to do me like that, Arn? This whole thing's in kayfabe. What's the point? And I thought Arn was just going to have this amazing book. I'm sure there's a great book that Arn could tell because he's an incredible storyteller and so witty and has been everywhere, especially now. Before, when he wrote that book, it was just part of his career now, the last 20 years or so, almost 20 years, he's been an agent for WWE. And all the, I mean, just one day that guy can write a hell of a book if he ever decides to do it. You know, talking a little bit about Japan, New Japan will be doing a tournament in Singapore on November 15th at the Marina Bay Sands Convention Center. New Japan has flirted with doing more and more in different regions. Do you think they can ever viably, will it ever be viable for them to do something in the States on their own, not partnering with anyone, maybe in conjunction, of course, with Access? But do you ever think that will be viable?
I think so. Much more so than you go back to 2011 when they did that infamous Northeast tour, and it was a disaster, where they introduced the Intercontinental title, and it wasn't on enough people's radar to where it meant a lot. Today, I think it's much different. Where you have, I mean, you look at the difference when Ring of Honor brings in the top stars and the reactions they get in the different markets that they run, whether it's Vegas, whether it's Toronto, New York, they're so much more familiar now with these stars. I honestly believe if New Japan, were to break off, and I don't sense that they are, I think they enjoy this working agreement. It works both ways with ROH and New Japan. But if they were to come in, especially on like a WrestleMania weekend, and you're telling me they were going to do a New Japan show, I think that would do tremendously well. You would have to pick your spots. I don't think this is something that, I mean, just logistically, you couldn't be coming here regularly. But to do a tour today, mm-hmm. I think there would be dramatically different results than they had 5 years ago.
Man, I would love just to check out this Singapore show. I'm assuming it's going to be on New Japan World. I don't know that. But that's a show that they're doing in November. And Tanahashi will be appearing on a TV Tokyo drama. And I might have this name wrong, but Ishikawa Goman.
Is he going to be a drug dealer on that as well?
Man, I hope not. I don't know.
You know,
he
you know
really
what he'll
look
be...
like a drug dealer to me. Not that Cody you does.
Know, he would be dealing Tanahashi. Goodbye, everyone. It's been a great week of chatting. We'll speak with you next week. This weekend, we've got
WWE. We're still, I thought we were done. I was just like,
No.
That was a false finish on a podcast.
Actually, I want to tie this in with UFC. We've got No Mercy this weekend,
yes.
And the following weekend, the UFC was supposed to be going to Manila, but they have now moved that card. Their wording is rescheduled. It is not occurring. There have been a number of reasons thrown out. The UFC is citing BJ Penn's injury, which MMAJunkie.com reported earlier this week. He's out of the main event. Now, there has been other reports out from Talk MMA and Jeremy Botter as well that the Filipino government was going to be instituting some extremely rigorous drug testing that would go beyond just fighters to like all personnel. And they were reporting the fact that if anyone popped hot, their passports would be seized. And this may have had a big reason to do with the card being moved as well. So anyway, next weekend, there's no UFC card. So after this weekend, Court, for the next 3 weekends, there is no UFC and no WWE.
Feels good. Feels real good. But there is a WWE NXT Tag Team Tournament. What do you think of the 2016?
Wow, you just brushed that one off and moved on. Wow, nothing.
You got to keep moving. You know for a fact that there's going to be some shit that's going to hit the fan in the next 3 weeks. Somewhere, somehow. I mean, and you also got the UFC New York show coming up, and that's going to be a beast in November. So all the more reason to have that
gap. Are we going to do a live Bauer and Pollock together?
I don't see why we shouldn't. I will be in town for that.
You will be. This is a rare big event coming to your town, and you're staying in town.
See, that only applies to professional wrestling.
Oh, okay. It's just mixed martial arts is on your good list.
Yes, I just have post-traumatic stress disorder.
You know what's crazy? I didn't even put it together until I got my flight information this week that myself and Wei are flying out Wednesday morning, the day after the U.S. election.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to descend upon your country in the new era. Well, I guess the new era doesn't really begin until January.
It doesn't, but it'll be a shit show no matter who wins. That much I can tell you is a lock.
Hey, last thing on this, on the New York show. They are counting on getting tons of New York media. Do you think being the week of the election, is there going to be that same focus? Like, I know the sports outlets are going to be covering that big, but are they going to be battling just all of the election withdrawal and all the insanity in New York, do you feel?
No, they're going to hit, they'll be the the focal point of all the local sports talk. But at the same time, because it's a great time, really. I mean, you'll have football to compete with, but you know, you're not going to have anything on the basketball end yet.
Baseball playoffs should be done by then, right?
The Mets. I mean, that's it. So yeah, I think it's in terms of the sports category, they're going to be great. And you never know with politics and what's going to go on. But they're going to sell out. They're going to do terrific business. They're going to own the town in terms of sports talk, I would assume, that week. But they're not going to get like front page probably coverage. Maybe if it was a very quiet week, they would, but not that week. I don't think it's really going to impact them. They're going to make a big impression in the New York market in November. There's no two ways about it. And it's kind of crazy too, because also running the Garden, of course, there'll be the theater, which is like in the ass of Madison Square Garden, is going to be NXT. And it's such a crazy, weird place to host wrestling. The theater at Madison Square Garden in the past was one of the rare times, technically, WCW ran the Garden. It was the theater. It's essentially is a theater, like a Broadway theater almost looking configuration, where depending on how you set it up, most of the time they like to put the ring on the stage because it cuts down on the union bill. Sometimes they try to take seats out and they'll put the ring adjacent to the stage, and then it's a weird walkout and you don't have crowd and half the bill. It's weird. I'm curious to see how they configure it for NXT to make it look right. I don't think it's going to be a special. I think it's just going to be, I don't think it should be a special because it would look really bad on TV. But WCW ran it in the early 90s. I remember Johnny B. Badd doing local media and it was so bizarre. I also think AAA ran, the theater at Madison Square Garden. It might have been called the Paramount then, around the same time, 93, 94. They had maybe one or two shows. It seats about 3,000. Mm-hmm. Typically when like there used to be a big WrestleMania there, WrestleMania 10, you know, this would be a spillover and you'd watch on closed circuit TV and they'd always sell it out for those kind of things. Even at the height of the Monday Night War with Monday Night Raw coming through, they'd always sell out the theater.
Don't forget the home of the Lion's Den match between Owen Hart and Ken Shamrock in 1998.
That's like the perfect use for that part of the building, because that's about all you can get in there is a shitty little fake octagon. Everything else, it's too big. And I mean, Glory Kickboxing, I think once or twice might have used it.
That should be Goldberg versus Lesnar.
Buddy.
The Lion's Den match.
Lion's Den match with those two. The little like play, like it was like a kid's like play octagon. It looked like something you could buy at Toys R Us and inflate or something. It did not look like a real octagon. I'm interested to see how they make that work. Just the economics, I know, are almost impossible to make it profitable unless the Garden really wants their business back. And the interesting thing about what's going on with WWE right now in the New York market is the fact that the Barclays Center has given them such an incredible deal to use the building with great frequency, that they really, along with several other key clients of the Garden, have moved over to the Barclays Center, including the Circus. The Circus no longer goes to the Garden.
Oh, no.
So the long tradition of the Circus now has ended, and it's going to Barclays, which is insane. But if you're like a basketball or Rangers fan, that was a pain in the ass, because for a few weeks you basically were on the road because of the Circus every year for 1,000 years. So
How do you like the venue, just going there live? I've never attended the Barclays Center.
It's great. You know, it's meant for mass transit, not for cars, is the best way to put it. So if you're driving out, it's a little bit of a pain, but, if you're in the city or if you can take a train in, it's really, you know, take the subway, it's fantastic. It's a beautiful arena. It's smaller. In terms of crowd, the energy is really good because it's a smaller building and you can just, the energy in there is much better. The Garden is, you know, they revamped the Garden. It looks beautiful. They have actually right now, if you go through, they'll have like a little, display behind glass of, mementos from WrestleMania. I think Hulk Hogan has something in there. They have maybe something from Andre, something from Piper maybe. And they have it for basketball. They have it for everything. And so it really does, you feel the history and the ghosts of the Garden when you go through there. But, the cost, it stings everyone so bad that Vince will run it, but he doesn't run it as often as he used to. Now, you know, looking at December, he's going to run the Garden and then a day or two later run Barclays, which I think is an interesting 1-2 combo. But the theater, I got to think they must have given WWE such an amazing deal because there's no other reason they would run that building than that. I mean, and it's something also that's going on in New York is like the Hammerstein was asking for an outrageous amount, which is why Ring of Honor moved to the West Side and went to Terminal 5 because they had a new guy running the booking of the Hammerstein, and it was like the price was spiked so high. It was like so cost prohibitive. And a really shitty thing to do for people that have been working with you for years and steady business. And it became a ghost town. Like, no one was booking the Hammerstein. They used to get concerts. They used to get a lot of stuff. There was nothing going in there. So I think that guy might have left. Because now Ring of Honor, of course, going back to a great building that ECW's run. A lot of companies have played with, WWE. New York's a son of a bitch. You think there'd be more venues for wrestling. It's a tough fucking place. It really is when it comes to venues.
I also want to mention that Roddy Piper's kids have just put out this book.
Yeah.
Roddy Piper had started this book just before he had died, and he was working with a reporter from up here in Canada, and I think they were only like 6 weeks deep onto this, and then he passed away. And it was his kids, Colt and Ariel, who finished this, and they were doing a media tour up here in Canada. I actually got to speak with them earlier this week. This book, I would definitely recommend. I'm about three quarters of the way through it. And I know with Roddy Piper, you assume, okay, well, where is the fact beginning and the fiction ending? And they essentially address this right at the beginning, that this was a guy that towards the end of his life was very much having these like identity issues. Like, he's played this character his entire life that he himself can't separate fact and fiction from his own life. And that was what this book was to be, speaking to a lot of his family, going back and just piecing a lot of this together, understanding his childhood, which is a pretty sore spot in his memory. And even to the point that he explained to his wife when they had first met, when some fan came up to them asking about where Roddy grew up, and he explained to her that, listen, I have crafted this entire history of how I grew up and where Roddy Piper, like where this character is. It doesn't just end when it is the match is over, for instance. It's a pretty interesting look at Roddy Piper, who is somebody that, I mean, typically a great storyteller, but you would always, you know, like his first book, which was very much more of just the fiction of Roddy Piper. So if you are thinking about reading this book, I would definitely recommend it. I think it's a look at Roddy Piper that is really interesting, and his kids ended up finishing this book over the last year since he passed away. So I want to recommend that.
Yeah, my experience with Roddy Piper, I always found him to be a real gentleman, just a real sweetheart of a guy. A lot of people had bad experiences. I'm not one of those people. I was like, actually expecting, like, oh, what am I going to get here? And he was like calling me sir. And I'm like, dude, you know, please, I call you sir. You can call me whatever the fuck you want. But just a really humble, down to earth guy, very, very much available. You know, some of the legends would blow off, staff or whatever, or just didn't know how to deal with modern day environment. He was just a charmer, like a really sweetheart of a guy. And, you know, like every wrestler, I'm sure he had his things he battled, and, you know, the identity crisis, because look at Hulk Hogan and, you know, his, like, is the character's penis 10 inches or is it 6 inches? What, you know, it's like they do, if you're in the business long enough, it feels like you do kind of mutate into a hybrid of the character and your real person, and they become something else. And I think having a normal existence is a struggle because you're a star. And you've crafted this persona, and it's like you're a worker too. It's like it's a really – those are bad qualities to combine and try to exist and be happy and have a stable life and family. But, you know, it's hard for me to believe we lost Hot Rod last year, you know, last summer. He was like a guy that just was once in a lifetime type. You know, personalities and just incredible charisma, incredible talker. And he was one of the guys that got me hooked into pro wrestling. I remember watching as a kid, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy is – I just want to see Hulk Hogan destroy him. He was such a good heel, but also an entertaining heel. You know, it was – he had a unique quality about him that not many guys from that era had. You know, he was not the biggest guy, but, man, you wanted this – you knew he was a formidable foe for Hulk Hogan, who was so big. Hey, I'll check out the book. What's the name of it?
It's called Rowdy, The Roddy Piper Story, and it's out through Random House Canada. And I imagine you can grab it wherever, Amazon or whatnot. Before we end this off, this weekend we've got No Mercy and New Japan has King of Pro Wrestling on Monday. I assume you'll be watching both, Court.
Trying to find out a clever way of saying no mercy to no mercy, kind of like the French, like no thank you to no mercy. No, never mind. Yeah, I'll be watching No Mercy. Hey, maybe your friend Matthew Dubé of the Canadian House of Commons can say something.
No, he's a Raw guy.
Oh, sorry. But yeah, I'll be watching that show. I mean, there is a lot of shows. I mean, between the UFC on Saturday, Sunday No Mercy, Raw on 3 hours on Monday. I mean, just look at the whole schedule. You go over it. Lucha Underground, TNA, NXT. At least we don't have the Cruiserweight tournament right now, but there's going to be a women's tournament soon. And it's like, is that even? Should we be doing more tournaments? We had a tournament for the Universal Champion recently. We had the Cruiserweight tournament. It's like overwhelming how many tournaments. We're tournament crazy right now. It's just in the WWE.
The weekend that frightens me is that Survivor Series weekend. That is going to be just insanity. Just take over Survivor Series. Yeah. There is, on top of that, two UFC cards on the Saturday.
Why not?
Plus, there's a Bellator show, and it's an actual, like, notable show for Bellator from San Jose on the Saturday. Raw is here in Toronto.
Jim Ross?
Jim Ross is doing a show here. Chris Jericho's doing a show here in Toronto.
Hell, I might just come up and do a show. No, I'm just kidding.
The Court Bauer Experience.
Yes. We have cameos by Damian Abraham, yourself. We can make it happen, but yeah, there's a lot of shit going on in Toronto, and you guys will still be hung over from the Blue Jays run, I'm sure.
How deep do you think the Jays are going to go into this these playoffs? Yeah. I mean, they were not favored here against Texas, but man, after game one,
it's almost like the Kansas City thing for me. It's like I had never thought they were going to get as far as they ended up going. So I'm kind of rooting for the Blue Jays because I remember the early 90s. Oh, I almost took a bump in my chair. I was leaning back and went almost.
Speaking of bumps, did you see David Ortiz last night in the Red Sox Indians game hustle for this double? 40 years old, and he slides in the second.
Dude, why not? What
a treasure!
Why not? You know, this is it. What the fuck? You might as well just go for it all. Yeah, dude. I hope the Blue Jays go far. I do. I remember the early days when I was not early days, but the early 90s, which was the early days for me watching baseball. And they had an incredible team back in the 93-94 period. Maybe I'm off a year or two.
92-93.
Yeah, and it was
a symbolic 2 years in our history.
It was a good. You had a hell of a run there, and it's good to see the stadium packed again. Because I remember when it was. Very quiet.
There is nothing, Court, more depressing than a crappy game in the middle of nothing at the Sky Dome, now Rogers Center, when there would be not like a third full for a Jays game. It's so depressing in that dome. But when it is full,
it's awesome.
And it's incredible.
It feels like when you watch a game when it isn't full, it's like, almost feels like you're in outer space. I don't know how to explain it, but it feels like.
Because inside, it feels like a giant warehouse when you're in there, especially when the dome is closed. So it's like if it's not packed, it has no character to it. It's just walls and steel. That's it.
That's it.
That's the nuts and bolts of the Rogers Center.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe one day soon you'll get a new stadium, something with a little bit more character, because that's from the era when they were just building these things. And it was just like, oh, my God, there's nothing here that makes you want to – it was the era before like they had cool parks like Camden down in Baltimore and stuff. That kind of kicked off a new era where people wanted that more of that throwback feel where it was a fun experience to go to a game. But, yeah, it is like a massive freaking warehouse. I never looked at it like that.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. By next week, I think we'll still be talking about the Jays. I don't know if mathematically they can be – well, they probably can, actually, because we have a game today, a game Sunday night head-to-head with No Mercy, these bastards and their scheduling, and then Monday night. Thanks a lot, Major League Baseball, as our stupid market doesn't apply to the American broadcasters.
Okay.
I'm going to get very hot about it, Court. Just like the Jays are getting hot right at the perfect time of the year after a dreadful September.
There you go.
Court, what is going on this weekend? What are you going to get your audience hot about this weekend?
Well, we got a new history in the making out where Matt Farmer and I look back in part one of our look at Memphis wrestling. We're talking Sputnik Monroe, segregation in pro wrestling, the split of the two different groups. It's a really good look at Memphis wrestling, home of Jerry Lawler and so many other guys. Don't miss it. It's at MLWVIP.com. It's a VIP exclusive podcast. Cost just $1.99 to go VIP, so check that out. And also, we have a new Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard out today, later today, where he looks at 96-97 when WWF partnered with ECW, and what was the real story behind that whole weird, unholy union between Vince McMahon and Paul Heyman, and what the aftermath, everything you want to know about that. That's dropping later today. Go to MLWRadio.com. We also have Ric Flair talking with the Count, Michael Bisping. And Bisping actually made some crazy comments about his feelings on Brock Lesnar taking steroids and everything. And it's a pretty interesting show, so you don't want to miss that one as well. Tons of new stuff up. MSL and Sullivan are back today looking at WCW, looking at the current events in wrestling before good old MSL hopefully it doesn't blow away in this hurricane. And that's the other thing I want to say is my thoughts go out to everyone affected by Hurricane Matthew down in the south. Hope you guys get through it and don't have too much to worry about in terms of loss of power and all the other shitty stuff that happens with the hurricane. So that's how I want to close it out. You?
You can go to liveaudiowrestling.com to catch all of our shows, reviews of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and then Sunday night we'll be live midnight Eastern with The Law. It'll be myself and Jason Agnew running through No Mercy. We will have Mick Foley on the program chatting about his role as the Raw general manager. Dave Meltzer will be on the program as well to discuss all of this week's news. And you can also go to youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling for video interviews and video versions of Review a Raw and Review a SmackDown this week. So you can catch all of that. Court is at Court Bauer. I am John Pollock. I actually just got an email this morning, Court, about verification on Twitter.
Oh, no.
Let me say, as someone that runs two accounts, the Law account and my own account.
You just got verified?
The Law one's been verified for some time. Mine is not. Oh. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
One bit.
It doesn't. I started this joke on Tuesday's MLW radio because MSL inexplicably got verified. It's like getting the fake Bobby Heenan account verified in my book. But, do you make one more penny? No. Do you, get tweet? I mean, we should get paid.
You could argue you don't make a penny period
no.
on
well,
Twitter,
yeah,
no matter what. Though, it is a metric that people do use, I think, sometimes
WWE,
overuse.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you start trending, I should say, on Twitter, you know, WWE may want to sign you. But yeah, it's funny because I've been just joking about it on my Twitter. And all of a sudden this morning, I wake up to a tweet from the Iron Sheik saying, Bubba the Legend will help you. And I'm like, yeah, the Iron Sheik's going to humble Twitter. I love it.
Look at this muscle that Court Bauer is able to get on board for his Twitter campaign.
Oh, yes.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for us, folks. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll speak with you next week.